How big a threat to the banking system is cyber risk, and what should banks and regulators be doing about it? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research, a series of conversations with the world's leading economists. My name is Tim Phillips. We think of cyber risk as something that's the responsibility of individual firms, but in the financial sector, there's a systemic risk too. So what should regulators do? The principles of cyber risk regulation is the subject of a new CEPR discussion paper, which lays out what can and should be done to manage these risks. And one of the report's authors, Anne Wetherilt, is a senior advisor at the Bank of England, and she's here in the studio with me. Anne, welcome to Vox Talks.
Hello, Tim.
And also down the line from the University of Chicago, we have her co-author, Anil Kashyap, who is both a member of the bank's Financial Policy Committee and a CEPR fellow. Anil, welcome too.
Hi, Tim.
Anil, what prompted you to write this paper?
The Financial Policy Committee was created in the aftermath of the financial crisis to try to manage the risks that we hadn't managed in the crisis. And so one of the things that we've been studying is cyber risk. There's been lots of perspectives on cyber risk, and since Anne and I are economists, we thought it might be helpful to take a traditional economics approach to try to see where that leads in thinking about this problem.
And banks prepare for operational shocks every day. So why is the character of a cyber shock different?
So, yes, we started by asking ourselves, what is special about a cyber shock? How does it differ from either financial shock or more operational shocks as a major storm or a terrorist attack? And in the paper, we argue that a cyber shock is special in two ways. First, the nature of the shock, and second, its impact. And if I start with the former, evidence suggests that cyber shocks can have four distinct attributes. The intent, it's typically conducted with a malicious intent. The probability, cyber experts accept that a successful high-impact event is a matter of when rather than if. Third, the timing, a cyber event can remain invisible for a long period of time. And fourth, the shocks evolve. Cyber actors are constantly innovating, seeking to exploit previously untapped vulnerabilities. And then we looked at the impact, and we argued that the impact may differ too. A cyber event may have a widespread impact. And in part, this is a consequence of the interconnectedness of the financial system. And the timing of the impact may be uncertain. And this relates, of course, to the earlier point I made about the hidden phase. So together, the nature of the shock and the impact mean that managing cyber risk is a challenging task, both for firms and for regulators.
But Anil, if the risk is as great as Anne describes, why can't we rely on banks to do what's necessary to protect themselves out of their own self-interest?
Of course they want to protect themselves, but we have to recognize they have finite resources to do that. And so we want to make sure that they prioritize things in a way that will make the overall financial system safe. That means paying attention to disruptions that threaten the delivery of critical services to the economy, and making realistic assumptions about how much external support they might have. For instance, most firms will assume that they can hire consultants and access government resources. However, if there were a broad attack, that might not be a good assumption. So part of what a supervisor can do is consult with the firms to push them to think about these particular circumstances and considerations to make sure they've been taken into account.
You proposed three micro-prudential principles for regulators in this paper. The first is to assume that a successful attack is inevitable. And what does this change?
So this first principle follows directly from my earlier description of the nature of the shock. And as Anil mentioned, firms have finite resources. And of course, they need to ensure that they have adequate protection in place so cyber actors don't gain access to their systems and data in the first place. But if at some point a significant cyber event does occur, then as supervisors, we want to make sure that firms have prepared for the disruption. So that's what the first principle conveys.
Another one of these microprudential principles is that banks should prepare for a prolonged system-wide disruption, as you describe it. Anil, how does this affect the way they plan?
Hopefully, they're going to cooperate and maybe even pool resources to deal with that kind of situation. And So what a supervisor can do in this case is make sure that that objective is in mind by including a discussion about a long systemic attack as they're going through various possibilities with the firms.
Anil, you're also arguing that regulators don't just regulate individual firms, but think about the stability of the entire system. Why does doing the first not automatically mean that you're doing the second?
This is a great question. I mean, it's really, it goes to the core of what a macroprudential regulator like the FPC should be doing. Financial stability, as I said earlier, comes down to making sure that the financial system can deliver critical services to support the economy. You can't be sure that that's going to happen if you're only looking at the firms individually on their own without knowing their role in the overall financial system. So if you want to have proper expectations and requirements for the firms whose roles are essential, you're going to have to look at that specifically. You can't just take it for granted.
The first of your macro principles, Anne, is to conduct stress tests. We know about stress tests in the financial system in general, but in this cyber environment, what are they?
I'm actually going to take principle 4 and principle 5 together, if I may. Together, these principles say two things. First of all, they emphasize the importance of setting clear expectations for what we refer to as the delivery of critical economic functions. These are the functions that the financial system provides to the real economy. And second, we then want to assess that firms, regulated firms, can meet those expectations. And the latter is really what the cyber stress testing is going to focus on. If I may illustrate this with what the FPC has been focusing on. Last year, the FPC introduced the concept of impact tolerance. And this is defined as the tolerance for the length of any period of disruption to the delivery of these critical economic functions, the FPC's tolerance. As we say in the paper, disruption could come from two angles. A large provider, call it a critical node, could be disabled, or multiple firms or critical nodes could be affected at the same time. And what we're saying is that firms need to plan for both type of events. And then we introduce the concept of stress testing, and this is something that is being developed as we speak. The intention is to give firms a severe but plausible stress scenario, and then ask them whether they will be able to recover their critical functions within this specified time frame.
And this stress testing program is happening already, is it?
We are developing this stress testing program, yes, and we will be conducting a pilot in 2019.
Finally, Anil, you're recommending more diverse software choices, but regulators can't mandate that a bank changes software because another bank's using it. So in practice, how does this work?
Well, this is kind of a subtle point, but some of the risks that can threaten stability come from external services that firms in the financial industry rely on. So software is one example. Cloud services would be another, and that there are more than that. We want to make sure that if one of the external services runs into trouble, the regulator firms have some sort of backup plan or alternative strategy that means that they won't be crippled. So a stress test like Anne just mentioned is one way to do this. How would that work? Well, if almost everybody in the industry relies on a dominant provider, a stress test can suppose that there are problems at that provider. And then you can ask the regulated firms whether they can recover. So that creates incentives for the firms to diversify their service providers and maybe also to innovate to hedge this kind of risk.
Anil, is there anything else we should know at this point about cyber risk and financial stability that hasn't been covered in these six principles?
I hope that you can see that the FPC is working diligently on these issues and will be continuing to do so for the foreseeable future. But I don't want people to take away that that's going to be enough, not even just for the UK. Cyber risk has a huge global component, and so it's really an international problem. And the Group of Seven economies have also been actively working on these issues. So please stay tuned to what they're doing as well.
Yeah, I don't think that anyone, Anil, who reads the paper is going to come away thinking, well, there's nothing to worry about here, certainly. So Anil and Anne, thank you very much. Anne, thank you.
Thank you, Tim.
And Anil, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Now, the report is called Some Principles for Regulating Cyber Risk, and the authors, Anil Kashyap and Anne Wetherilt, and it's CEPR discussion paper 13324. If you don't read the paper, don't tell us later that nobody warned you. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Subscribe to us on your podcast platform and spend holidays checking out our other episodes from 2018. Or find the archive at www.voxeu.org/vox-talks.